The views expressed on this program are the views of the individual broadcaster and by no means reflect the view of Wesleyan University or the WESU management. Hello, and welcome to Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, a progressive-minded radio show about faith and action, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown, and WESUFM.org, providing community radio that matters. I'm Maria Johnson. Today, our faithful film critic, Richard Oliva, who writes for the Catholic journal Commonweal, discusses the Wim Wenders documentary film, Pope Francis, A Man of His Word. It's the kind of film Richard says he usually hates, but this one's the exception. He even admits to having shed a tear. Also today, a look at Pope Francis's private and public pronouncements on LGBTQ matters and how they don't exactly line up. Can't listen live? Find the audio archived later tonight at reasonablycatholic.com. A word about WESU's spring pledge drive. I'm told that Reasonably Catholic listeners have stepped up and donated in greater numbers than anyone else. Thank you to everyone who gave, and those of you who aren't mad at me for having asked. If you still haven't given, please do your part to support independent, free-form community radio. Go to WESUFM.org/pledge. Thanks. Up next, Richard Oliva.
That face, that wonderful face. It shines, it glows.
Oh. Welcome back, Richard.
Well, thank you, Maria. Thank you for sending me off to another movie.
I don't think it's even in the theaters anymore locally, but people can still get it, so it's worth talking about.
It will soon be available on DVD.
Right.
And what is this movie you sent me?
This movie is Pope Francis, A Man of His Word. So many thoughts. Even though I've seen it some, like, I feel years ago.
Yes.
But I can probably resurrect my recollection of it. Kind of apropos of it, yeah. I am going to pair our chat today with one I've already conducted with a beautiful man named Francis DiBernardo, who's the director of New Ways Ministry, which is an LGBTQ Catholic organization, not sanctioned by the church, don't get me wrong, but they work for full equality in the church for gays. So we talked about Pope Francis's saying progressive-minded things in private to individuals who come to, like, sexual abuse survivors, things like, God made you this way. God made you gay, you know? But publicly, nothing.
Well, he stopped short of that, but he's also said, who am I to judge? That's almost his most famous statement so far.
I know, but there's no rubber meeting the road in terms of action. Yeah. So we can talk about how Wim Wenders kind of overlooks any complaints about Pope Francis. That was really my only objection to this beautiful film, is it was a bit of a Valentine. Do you agree?
Pope Francis, A Man of His Word, is the kind of movie I hate. But I didn't hate it. In fact, I kind of loved it.
What did you tell me in your email?
Well, I said just that.
And you cried.
Oh, I think one tear escaped out of the corner of my eye by the end of the movie. I was so moved by it. Yet it is the kind of movie I dislike or even hate because, as you said, it's kind of a Valentine. But even if it weren't a Valentine, it's the sort of movie in which the camera and the microphones are set up to record the message of an individual without any sort of critique of him. I don't mean criticism, but without any examination of what he's saying and without different points of view being given.
Right.
I mean, you don't get any, what's his name, Ross Druhat from the New York Times.
Druhat, yeah.
Druhat. You don't get his comments or criticisms of Pope Francis, whether valid or invalid. Instead, you just get a kind of passive recording of what Pope Francis believes and emotional support for whatever he believes from the soundtrack's swelling music and from Wim Wenders' agreeable comments on the soundtrack. So it's like, it's not an iconoclastic film. It's just the opposite of iconoclastic. It's icon-making film.
Now,
that's the sort of film I hate, but I didn't hate the movie. I do hate the kind of movie it is, but I ended up being very, very moved by the power of his personality. And this has something to do with that personality. That personality is so much warmer than any Pope I can recall.
Yeah.
I mean, John Paul, John Paul had a very strong and powerful personality, obviously, and that won him great popularity in his fight against communism. But this Francis has an all-embracing, loving, it's cliches to describe him, but cliches are called for in his case. And Wim Wenders, the director of the film, did, and this is a world-class director, was not only to set up the camera to adore. I was trying to avoid that word. Almost to adore him, but you'll notice that the camera is set up so as to make Pope Francis have eye-to-eye contact with the viewer. Now, this is something that's almost never, never done in documentaries or in television programs featuring interviews. You look at an interview on 60 Minutes. The person being interviewed is not making direct eye contact with you because the interviewer has positioned himself or herself on a diagonal with the person being interviewed so that the interviewee is looking at Mike Wallace or whomever off camera on a sort of diagonal, so he is not making eye-to-eye contact with you at home.
Right.
Because if he makes eye-to-eye contact, it somehow upsets the viewer. Not upsets, but slightly discombobulates the viewer to make that kind of eye-to-eye contact. But Wim Wenders does this deliberately in this film in order to make you, the viewer, feel like you're sitting in a private audience with the Pope, on a chair in front of him, maybe one foot away from him, and making eye contact with him. So the Pope comes across as having this powerful, inescapable, all-embracing presence. You feel you can't escape him, that he's got his arms around you.
It's true.
And given the warmth of his personality, which he certainly has in spades, this film really, really grips you with that personality. So it's not an examination, not a critical examination of his ideas. It's a laying out of his ideas and his exhortations to humanity.
And I should take it on its own terms.
That's what it is. So as I said, I don't like this kind of documentary, but this movie worked on me insofar as it moved me. At the same time, I was so surprised before I saw the film that they got Wim Wenders to do it, or rather Wim Wenders proposed himself for the movie and received carte blanche from the Vatican to do whatever he wanted with him. There was no critical pressure brought to bear on him.
So which part surprised you the most, that Wim Wenders would do it or that the Vatican would say, have at it?
They both surprised me. But I was wondering before I saw the movie what interested Wim Wenders. Then I saw the movie, the documentary, and then I had a look back at some of the past films of Wim Wenders, and I had to reach the conclusion that this is the subject, the man, the hero he has been waiting for in so many ways. And
why?
And he has gone on to say that this is the movie that he is proudest of.
Cut it out.
This man who has made acclaimed masterpieces.
Yes, like, why don't we name some?
Well, Paris, Texas.
Wings of Desire.
Well, Wings of Desire is like, that's regarded by some critics, as most critics, in fact, as the masterpiece of Wim Wenders of films, that this is the greatest film he's ever made. I don't quite agree with that. But he has made some extraordinary films. But if you look at his past work, especially Wings of Desire, and especially one of his latest movies, Everything Will Be Fine, which nobody has heard of, although it's got a world-class cast headed by James Franco, seems to have gone directly to DVD. And I must say, it is one of the greatest movies ever made.
Stop!
Yeah, greater than Wings of Desire. But that's the case. So if I could just...
I love the title. I need to see a movie that says everything will be fine.
it's such a dopely, happy, banal title, but it is not a banal movie. It is the most extraordinary film I've seen in a long, long time. Made about 2 or 3 years ago, disappeared from the marketplace, or at least from the American marketplace. And if I may take just a short detour, this is the problem of today's movies, the whole cinematic scene. More films than ever, more than ever in the history of film, have been lost in the rush, in the glut. As movies are released, if a studio is willing to back up a film with enough advertising, willing to spend as much on advertising as they did on making the movie succeeds in getting in theaters. If not, not.
Wow. And even little art houses?
This movie didn't even get into the art houses as far as I know. Wow. I may have been in a few, but it certainly went past me, and I'm on the lookout for Wim Wenders films. I urge you to seek out this movie on DVD. It is on Netflix. You could probably get it at your local library, and the title is Everything Will Be Fine, if you can remember such a banal title. Okay. The film ends on the same close-up that the documentary has of James Franco, who's been restored to humanity by a series of events. He looks over his shoulder at the viewer and makes eye-to-eye contact with the viewer in the same way that Pope Francis does in the documentary.
You are listening to a conversation with film critic Richard Oliva about the new Wim Wenders documentary, Pope Francis, A Man of His Word. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you every week this summer from Wesleyan University's WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown, providing community radio that matters. Back with more from Richard. So in preparation for our visit today, you rounded up Wim Wenders films and had a little festival at your house.
Yes, yes.
So because you were interested in why Wim Wenders was interested. Am I right?
Yes, absolutely. And I think the answer lies in Wings of Desire, which has been described by another critic, Michael Atkinson, as a soaring anthem for everydayness.
Oh.
As Buddhist as it is Christ-like, but defined by its own metaphysics. Keep in mind, Wim Wenders is brought up Catholic in Dusseldorf, Germany, by Roman Catholic parents, subsequently converted to Protestantism. Maybe he had to because he's had five wives. And it's probably been influenced by many other religions, and probably by Buddhism as well. But nevertheless, Wings of Desire is Catholic in its iconography. But most of all, you can see in the way its story plays out and the conclusions, the tentative conclusions, the implicit conclusions that the movie reaches, that Wim Wenders was destined to make a movie about this particular man.
Really?
Pope Francis. Absolutely. Wenders set out to make a movie about the separation between people and how that separation might be mitigated. And he also wanted to make a very specific movie about Berlin, a city he had to rediscover for himself because he spent 8 years in America, and after all, he was brought up in Dusseldorf. he wanted to really explore Berlin in a way that's never been done before, because he regards it as the archetypal modern city, the city of isolation, self-isolation, alienation, to use these overused words. The name of the movie is an American title, Wings of Desire. That's not the German title.
Oh.
The German title is Sky Over Berlin. Now, he made it when the city was still divided into West and East. He made it back in 1985, 4 years before the bringing down of the wall. And Wenders asked himself, what is it that unites the city now in 1985? Well, look up. It's only the sky, sky that overarches West and East Berlin. That's the only thing that unites it. Because you stand in Berlin in the West and look in the direction of the East, there's the wall. It's inescapable. Same thing on the other side. And he felt that the citizens of Berlin also felt this division and this certain divisions within themselves. He says, who could take the best overview of the city? And he reached the conclusion, angels flying over the city as the sky overarches the city. So he decided to have for his heroes angels. Now, there's a whole subgenre of movies about angels. It's a Wonderful Life, The Horn Blows at Midnight, and they always use angels for comic effect. An angel comes down to Earth and makes contact with human beings and tries to help human beings. Think of The Bishop's Wife of Cary Grant and Loretta Young. And while the angel is going around healing people, after he takes human form, but he also makes comic mistakes because an angel behaves in a way that human beings don't usually behave. So the movies about angels making contact with people are always comic and romantic and kind of sloppy sentimental. Well, Wings of Desire is not that way at all. The angels don't take on human bodies for most of the movie. They move through the city, examining, cherishing human beings, invading yes. their minds, reading their thoughts. Not only reading their thoughts, but collecting their thoughts. And the main inspiration for this was the Duino Elegies by Rilke, one of the great German poems, and just the first few lines of the first elegy. And if I cried out, who'd listen to me in those angelic orders? Even if one of them suddenly held me to his heart, I'd vanish in his overwhelming presence, because beauty is nothing but the start of terror. We can hardly bear, and we adore it because of the serene scorn it could kill us with. Every angel's terrifying. Well, Wings of Desire was inspired by this, but it refutes all that. The angels are not terrifying. They do listen to human beings. They do embrace human beings.
They envy.
One of them envies human beings, and the one played by Bruno Ganz, the great German actor. And both angels embrace human beings, and human beings are not destroyed by that embrace.
Right.
They can barely feel the angels, because the angels are not only invisible, but they can't make mental contact with them either. Although children see them and then instantly forget the angels.
Oh, I want to see it again.
And Bruno, the Bruno Ganz, in the lead role of Damiel, finally comes, as you said, Maria, to feel envy of human beings. And the Pope's feeling for human beings, that human life should be cherished, should be embraced, that there should be no walls between people. Remember, he said, perhaps alluding to our current president, that he favored bridges and not walls. I think he could find inspiration in this movie. I'd love to know if Pope Francis really, really saw this film.
You know what I read his favorite film is?
What?
Babette's Feast.
Yeah, there. Okay, okay. There in Babette's Feast, life is cherished through food, but not because food tastes good, although that's part of it, but because so much loving care is brought to the preparation of the food. And so
and it
much,
brings people together
yes,
in a beautiful way.
And the people for whom she's preparing food are cherished by her
yes.
through her art,
right,
through her
right.
craft. And the way the angels in Wings of Desire cherish human beings and want to finally share in the lives of human beings is something that Pope Francis seems to be urging in his speeches to humankind and in the speeches he makes in this movie. So I really feel that when you see Wings of Desire, you'll see that Wenders really was the logical person for to make this movie.
Just talking about the Pope film a little more for folks, it spans multiple subjects.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Pope is interested in lots of things, poverty particularly, and there are these loving portraits of poor people in his arms, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really is heartrending almost.
He seems a favorite direct contact with people most of all.
How about when on the subject of the environment, when those images, I had never known this, but apparently images were projected onto St. Peter's Basilica at night.
Yes.
Images of garbage dumps and awful environmental disasters. So it's not just the Pope's face talking to us, it's that, plus these crazy little interjections of an old timey-looking film about St. Francis.
Yes, yes. Deliberately made as a silent movie.
What did you make of that?
Well, he wanted the fullest contrast possible between the presentness of Pope Francis and the pastness of St. Francis of Assisi, and yet the two men are speak
kindreds.
To each other.
Yeah,
kindred spirits over the abyss of time. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, it's almost kind of a corny device to make a silent movie about St. Francis.
But I enjoyed it, though.
Yeah, but he wanted it at furthest removed from the presentness of the color and the sound of the documentary. Yeah.
Or is there anything else about Wim Wenders' sensibility that you think informs the film? I mean, when you said he was brought up Catholic, that said it all. I was like, well, obviously, it got into his bones like it does with just about all of us, you know? And go as he might to the Protestants, he's still Catholic, you know? Is that what you take away?
I too, felt that. Wenders has spoken of people, individual people, resembling states.
States?
Governmental states.
Really?
demanding tolls for any contact.
Oh, I have to think about that.
In other words, we don't allow other people into our lives unless they make some sacrifice to our own needs to satisfy some part of our ego. And the Pope seems to want us not to charge high tolls, or perhaps not any tolls at all. He's saying, you know, get rid of these walls, get rid of these toll booths, and make direct contact. And Wenders started his career with a movie made in collaboration with Austria's greatest writer, Peter Handke, The Goalie's Anxiety at the Penalty Kick. And that's about a man who is utterly divorced from all other people, ends up committing murder because of his absolute lack of empathy, and ends up in total despair at the end of the movie. And the movie seems engineered to make the viewer feel total despair of making any contact between people. But gradually, as Wenders made more films, he gradually moves to a position in which he says people must make contact. He's desperate for contact.
I love that.
And when he comes to America, and he lived here for 8 years and made movies here with under the patronship of Francis Ford Coppola, and Zoetrope Studios. He made a movie that was a disaster, Hammett, and then he made a very successful movie, acclaimed by the critics, Paris, Texas, with a script by America's greatest playwright at that time, Sam Shepard. And Paris, Texas is a man who is a vagrant, who's divorced from humanity, just like the goalie in The Goalie's Anxiety. But he goes back into his own past, makes contact with the family, the wife and the son whom he abandoned years ago, reestablishes contact with them, realizes that they've moved on, and that after he's made contact with them and shown them his love, that he must still keep moving on in order to let them go on with their new lives, and that he just can't invade them anymore. But nevertheless, he has made contact with them, reestablished contact, and renewed his own life. And then when Wenders goes back to Germany, he makes Wings of Desire, in which angels are so much above humanity, so distant from humanity, and so loving of humanity, that they, one of them at least, sacrifices his angelic quality in order to gain humanity. As Bruno Ganz says in the movie, this must end, this view from above. I want to make eye contact level with humanity. And weren't we talking about the Pope in close-up? It's all one story. Level eye-to-eye contact, down with the walls, down with the toll booths, make direct contact, embrace other human beings.
It's so tempting to end there, but I just need to put a cherry on top by saying I love looking at an artist's oeuvre, if you will, as a kind of spiritual search of the artist that they may not even be aware is going on, you know? So many artists, I see that, that there's a development. In fact, they're plumbing their own psyche for their material.
Now, you can only do that, though, when you've achieved enough success to allow you to make very personal films. Wenders has traveled all over the world seeking out this kind of freedom and achieving it sporadically in one country after another. He's made films in America and in Germany and in Canada. And I must say, Everything Will Be Fine, I think, is his masterpiece. And in this movie, the hero, played by James Franco, achieves full connection both with his own past and with his present, and is not only able to heal himself and make contact with human beings, but is able to overcome a damaged boy's alienation and bring him back into humanity. And by the way, I think Everything Will Be Fine is his greatest movie.
Wow.
Not Wings of Desire.
You know, he's not a young man, Wim Wenders.
He was born in 1945, so he's 73.
Oh, okay. I thought he was even older. No. I thought he was like Herzog, you know, like way up there. So, okay, I feel better. I was worried that, feeling as he does about the Pope film, that what did you say? He's the proudest of it.
It's his proudest achievement,
that he maybe says he'll stop now, but I hope he doesn't.
Well, his new movie is just about to be released. It's Submersion.
Oh, okay.
And that deals with environmental damage.
Really?
So maybe the Pope inspired him.
He is cooking on all burners at an advanced age.
20 years ago, David Thompson, the British critic, said of him, he's a 50-year-old. Making movies like a 21-year-old. So we've got to wait, and we thirst to see his next achievement. Well, now he's 73, making movies like a very wise 40-year-old.
Wow.
So we'll see what he does next.
Thank you, Richard.
Sure.
That was a chat with film critic Richard Oliva about the Wim Wenders documentary film Pope Francis, A Man of His Word. Up next, also on the subject of Pope Francis, an interview with Francis DiBernardo, executive director of New Ways Ministry, which works to gain equality in the church for LGBTQ Catholics. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown, providing community radio that matters, and it's you that puts the community in community radio. Please go to wesufm.org/pledge, and if you haven't yet,
donate anything you can. It's greatly needed and greatly appreciated. Up next, Francis on Francis.
Just be for real. Won't you?
Welcome, Francis DiBernardo. So good of you to come on such short notice. I really appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
You know, we are going to try and say as much as we can in our short time together. Wow, what's going on over there in Rome? We should start with Pope Francis's follow-up, we'll call it, on the "Who am I to judge?" comment at the outset of his papacy. Now, well, why don't I let you quote what he said to this Chilean, right?
Yeah, to Juan Carlos Cruz, a Chilean man who is a gay man who was a victim of clerical sex abuse. Mr. Cruz said that in his conversation, his private conversation with Pope Francis, Pope Francis said, among other things, "God made you like this," meaning gay, "and loves you like this." It was at the point where they were discussing his gay sexual orientation. And he said, "God made you like this and loves you like this." That's a really remarkable statement to come from a pope. We've never heard a pope, and very few church leaders anywhere, say anything so affirming and so holy about gay people's lives and experiences.
You know, as I'm listening to you read it, I'm experiencing mixed feelings because, on the one hand, bravo for you, Pope Francis. On the other hand, well, now what? Let's do something about this because the church is teaching, you know?
It's a remarkable statement. My problem with it is that it was only said privately, and he won't and hasn't said anything that affirming publicly. So while it has possibility, it only has possibility if it gets followed up on. You know, if the Pope will declare this publicly and then recommend pastoral practices that would reflect that. Because so many pastoral practices today in churches and dioceses around the world express the opposite of that, express thoughts that you chose this, this is an evil phenomenon. I mean, we've heard many, many church leaders say incredibly harmful, dangerous, and negative things about gay and lesbian people.
In a recent email from New Ways Ministry, I read of either a bishop or an archbishop who likened being gay to being a thief. Right? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you elaborate on that?
Yeah, a cardinal who used to be the head of the doctrinal office at the Vatican said that homophobia is a hoax. And that it serves to threaten people, that it doesn't exist. He called it a form of psychoterrorism. Another archbishop in Jamaica, Archbishop Kenneth Richards, says if a person has maladaptive behavior of stealing, does that mean he was born a thief? Meaning, you know, that I think that's a very instructive statement to see their point of view. They really see gay orientation only in terms of behavior. Church leaders see gay and lesbian people only in terms of possible sexual behavior.
Yep.
They don't view other people primarily through that lens, but their lens for viewing gay and lesbian people is only and always primarily through behavior.
And not as real whole people.
And not as real people. There's so much more to the lesbian and gay experience,
right,
to the lesbian and gay spiritual and faith experience,
yeah,
than sexual behavior.
Obviously.
There's the courage that it takes to come out of the closet. There's the struggle that they have to go through to accept themselves. There's the overcoming of fear of being rejected. There's the experience of being rejected.
Right.
All of these and many more are part of the gay and lesbian experience,
yeah,
that allow gay and lesbian people to really bring gifts to the church that the rest of the church can learn from them.
Right. Getting back to the Pope, I mean, you must have puzzled over how this can be, that he could make a statement like that privately and yet let things continue as they are publicly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would be interested in your take on that. Is it that he yeah. I mean, people say, oh, he can't do anything too drastic. The church has to change slowly. It's like a big ship and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything else to...
I have two points,
okay,
I think, to say to that. And the first is my sympathetic view towards Francis, in that I think he realizes that he can't fight all battles in the church.
Yeah.
And that this is not the issue of gay and lesbian people is not a prime issue for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his encyclical was on with creation. He speaks a lot about poverty, and these are really important issues.
Right.
And I think he's more concerned with those issues. So that's one reason why I can see him speaking privately but not publicly,
mm-hmm,
about these. But the second thing is, I think he, this is my take on his genius, I would say, is,
mm-hmm,
that I think he realizes that the church really has to change its pastoral practice before it changes its teaching.
Oh.
And I think what he's doing is modeling good pastoral practice,
huh,
for the church.
Wow.
And I think I know this from my role here at New Ways Ministry. We're in touch with many parishes and dioceses and religious communities and schools. And, you know, since Pope Francis started making positive statements, people are much more emboldened and encouraged to be a little bolder in their pastoral practice.
Seems so
people.
It's kind of upside down in a way. You'd think the, mm-hmm, teaching would come first and then the practice, but modeling the, almost like breaking the rules first.
Right.
And getting people used to the new way before kind of formalizing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
You know, this is a third interpretation that I'm a little reluctant to say.
Oh, but, you must now.
I don't believe it, but it is an interpretation.
Okay.
And that is, you know, a lot of people who have anti-gay statements, who have anti-gay sentiments, could say the same thing that Pope Francis said, God made you this way and God loves you.
Hmm.
That's, you know, people who do not believe in marriage equality, who do not support people being open about their sexuality, could also say, you know, God does love gay people, and mm-hmm. God, and it seems that they were made that way.
Okay.
I don't think that that's Pope Francis's take on it.
Okay.
Because those people who say those things usually immediately qualify it by saying, God loves you, God made you this way, God loves you, but we can't accept your lifestyle.
Right, you right,
and,
right.
And Pope Francis doesn't say that. So.
In another email, and I do enjoy these, I have to say, and listeners would be well advised to get onto the email list for New Ways Ministry. Because
Thank you.
Oh, wow. I will put a link to it on the blog, but it's not complicated to find. In fact, why don't we say the address? It's newwaysministry.org?
.org/blog.
Okay. And you had
our daily blog on Catholic LGBT news, opinion, and spirituality. We update it every day.
That's a lot of work.
it's exciting work and fun work.
It's wonderful. Your heart is so in this. I'm so pleased and honored to talk to you. If you are just joining us, our subject today is Pope Francis. We started the hour with film critic Richard Oliva discussing the new Wim Wenders documentary film, Pope Francis, A Man of His Word. And now we're hearing from Francis DiBernardo, executive director of New Ways Ministry, which works to gain equality in the church for LGBTQ Catholics. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown, providing community radio that matters. Back with more from Francis.
Smiling faces. Sometimes pretend to be your friend, smiling faces.
The thing that caught my eye was the kind of best and worst of the LGBT news. why don't you hit a few of those for us?
Yeah, every year during Christmas week, the day after Christmas, we post a poll asking people to respond to the best and the worst news events in Catholic LGBT on Catholic LGBT issues of the past year, and we usually and we ask people to vote for five of them, and then we list the top 10 vote getters of the worst and the best.
Okay, and drum roll, please.
Well, among the worst that people tend to see, you know, we've done this for like 6 years now. They are very concerned about the firing of LGBT people from Catholic institutions when they've served faithfully and professionally for years, many of them.
That probably is not different from your previous surveys, right?
Right, right. That's something that's come up almost every, I think every year since we've been doing this.
Sadly.
Survey. Yeah, because there really hasn't been much of a break in that terrible trend. Other high vote getters tend to be, you know, statements from bishops that have the hateful messages, like comparing homosexuality to Nazism, to thievery, to nuclear destruction.
You have to laugh, really.
Yeah, it's pretty pretty amazing. But I think, you know, sadly what it shows is that our bishops really need to learn about sexuality and about gender, because the whole world is moving in new and positive directions in these regards. And Catholic people are moving that way, too.
Right.
And it's just the Catholic leadership that are going to be left behind.
Yeah, so interesting. Yeah. What do they call that? The voice of the people, right? Vox populi?
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, Catholic people, at least here in the United States and in Europe, are way ahead of their leaders in terms of LGBT issues. And they are, because they're Catholic, not in spite of being Catholic. They don't say, well, I'm Catholic, but they say, I'm Catholic, so.
Right. Right.
Meaning, I'm Catholic, so I believe in the dignity of all human people. I think I'm Catholic, so I believe everyone should be treated equally. I'm Catholic, so I want to respect people, even if I may not agree with their beliefs. These are our core Catholic values, and so it's there. It's their Catholicism that motivates their acceptance and their work for justice for LGBT people.
Right.
It's the bishops sometimes say, "Oh, Catholics think this way because we haven't educated them correctly." Well, I think the opposite is true. I think they have educated Catholics correctly on the Church's social justice teachings. And Catholics are applying these teachings to these new situations that the world is presenting and coming up with, with better answers than some bishops have come up with.
Yeah. I gotta believe that's a function of us lay Catholics being out in the world and knowing more gay and lesbian people than the bishops think they know.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I think bishops, as much as I criticize them, I do have sympathy that I think that they lead very isolated lives.
Yeah.
And if more of them would just reach out and have listening sessions with LGBT people, I think that they would realize they would come to new awarenesses.
This is only what Father James Martin was proposing that got such terrible blowback.
Right.
That there should be a bridge that goes both ways over this horrible, ridiculous chasm between the church and the LGBT community.
Right. Right. Yeah. Again, I think it's a blind spot on the part of the bishops. It's a blind spot, I think, in some ways as harmful and as deep rooted as racist and sexist ideas can be.
Right.
That because they have been so deeply planted in someone's cultural frame, it's hard to break out of it.
Yeah. Okay, with our remaining few minutes, why don't we end on the upbeat note of the best LGBT Catholic news?
The best LGBT Catholic news, over and over again, I think, is on Catholic college campuses.
Oh.
And I think that Catholic colleges and universities are doing amazing things to support their LGBT students, faculty members, staff members, administrators. Many of them are establishing gender-neutral bathrooms, have non-discrimination policies. A number of them have partner benefits in terms of insurance and access to campus facilities for their same-sex partners or spouses. They have, courses are being developed around gender issues and sexuality issues. You know, and so I think there's a lot going on, and I think part of it, I think one reason why that's so hopeful is that this is the future. What's on college campuses, excuse me, what's on Catholic college campuses today is going to be hopefully the future of the church.
Oh, yes.
You know, tomorrow they're going to be the people in the pews.
Right. From your mouth to God's ears. What else? Any other upbeat items to share?
There have been some bishops who have said some positive things about the love that exists between gay and lesbian couples. The bishops in Germany are doing amazing things. You know, we talked about here in the U.S. where people are being fired from their church jobs. The bishops in Germany set up a policy that no one could be fired because of their sexual orientation.
Wow.
Or their marital status.
I hadn't heard that. That's wonderful.
So they're calling for theological dialogue. They're calling for ways to examine blessing same-sex relationships. Even if they don't call it marriage, they say we have to find a way to bless what's positive in these regards. So
that is seismic. That's huge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In Austria, we had a story this year at Valentine's Day that there are parishes in Austria that already on Valentine's Day bless couples, and they will bless same-sex couples as well. So.
This is a beautiful, beautiful note to end on, unless you have anything more to add.
I think that there's, I think that the church leadership has painted their way, has painted themselves into such a corner of negativity on LGBT issues. And I think that the great thing that Pope Francis is doing is he's showing them a way out of this corner, you know, and a way out into the world. And while I wish, as I said, while I wish he would do things more publicly and more forthrightly, I believe that he is helping to take the first steps that haven't been taken for decades to cross that bridge.
Excellent. Francis DiBernardo, keep fighting the good fight.
Okay, you too.
I look forward to our next chat.
Same here.
That was an episode about Pope Francis, specifically the new documentary film about him, Pope Francis, A Man of His Word, and an inquiry by New Ways Ministries' Francis DiBernardo into the Pope's differing pronouncements lately on LGBTQ matters. If you missed any of the episode or want to check out related bells and whistles of interest, go to the ReasonablyCatholic.com blog later tonight. Finally, the radio station is still in need of your help during our spring pledge drive. If you appreciate the kind of programming you really can only find here at WESU, please go to WESUFM.org/pledge and give a few shekels to support it. Any amount with a 5 in it will mark Reasonably Catholic's 5th year on the air. Thanks. Next week, barring any breaking Catholic news, we'll visit with a Catholic entertainer, Ed Stivender. Now stay tuned for Wonderland with DJ Cheshire Cat.